Hey, hey, welcome to Sunday Messages with Fairmount Friends Church. So glad to have you with us today. You can learn more on our website, fairmountfriends.church, or find our church app on Tithely. Let's go.
Well, my name is Andrew Hale, and I'm one of the pastors here, and Pastor Brock and I have agreed roughly once a month I should get up here and talk. Yes, sir. So, Do the New You. We are returning to a series you may remember. It's been 2, maybe 3 weeks. There's a book that Pastor Brock and I are going through, and you're welcome to check it out as well. It's called Do the New You by Stephen Furtick, and it's got six mindsets to become who you were created to be. And it's just helpful. And as we move into today, the message that I am bringing, I'm really just preaching to myself. I asked Pastor Brock, hey, where do I need to go? Or is there a certain, you know, flow that we want to move into as we're transitioning back into this series? And he said, they kind of are pick and choose, use whichever one you wish. Okay. So I looked through it, figured out which one I struggle with the most, and said, let's go with that one. So today, what we're looking at is Christ is in me, and I am enough. Anybody else struggle with feelings of enoughness or trust at times? A few hands there. If you would turn to a neighbor, whether you've got one near to you or not, and say, Christ is in me, and I am enough. Go ahead. I didn't say whisper it. Speak it. Thank you, Dwight. Thank you. You got it. Thanks for appeasing me on that. So I think a lot of that stems from the word trust. It's a word we struggle with, a word that maybe we throw out there so often, but it's one that I think keeps us from so much in life. Whether it's encountering Jesus, it's coming forward on a Sunday, it's going to that person and speaking that word of encouragement, it's speaking that word of complaint and how do we work through it. It's working through the different dynamics of tension, of estrangement, of marriage, of kids to parents. We don't always know how to or what to do with trust. And I think sometimes as a church and as pastors, we can do a disservice to our church family and to our congregation where sometimes we can say something along the lines of, we're not asking God for things. It's not that he's a genie and you ask him and it's just going to happen, right? But that we can say there's so much more to God than the ask, and there's more to God to experience, and there's more for him to do and to surrender and to submit to follow. And I'm not walking any of that back, but I'm trying to say that we can believe he is true to his word. And what he says in his word is that he cares for you. No matter the pain, no matter what you've done, no matter what's been done to you, no matter how gross you might feel at times, no matter how fill in the blank, he loves you. But sometimes it can be hard for us to trust God. And I think three thoughts to why that might be is perhaps it's fear. Fear of God, I don't know what you're doing here. Fear of God, I don't really, haven't seen where you're really coming through. Fear of God, I don't even know who you are or how to make sense. Is God even real? And if you are real, are you good? Really? Perhaps it's trying to make sense and understand. So it's reason and it's logic. I can't make sense of what you're doing here. I can't make sense of a God who would allow these things to happen. I can't make sense of it. Doesn't fit. And perhaps we struggle to trust God because we can't quite touch. We can't quite taste. We can't quite get a grasp or a handle on who in the world is this being. I'm supposed to listen to God? I don't even know how to listen to my spouse, not to mention to God, right? I'm supposed to feel and experience him in some way? I don't even know how to feel anything except for excited when there's a home run, right? There's just different things that can spark something in us, and I do believe that each of those are legitimate. I think that there's legitimacy to some of that lack of trust or that mistrust we can have with God as we look at our experience in life. But could I speak to each of those for just a moment? We're going to go to the scriptures, Psalm 56, 3 and 4a. Speaking to fear, when I am afraid, I put my trust in you, in God whose word I praise, in God I trust, I shall not be afraid. When it comes to logic and reason, Proverbs 28:26, whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be delivered. And struggling with the material of today, how do we make sense of the ability to not touch or experience him? It says, Psalm 20, some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. So we get to make a choice. We can choose to believe his word, or we can just rip the page out of the Bible. We can choose to experience him, or we can say, I don't know. We can choose to say, God, I want more of you, or God, I want more of you over there. I want to watch it happen. I want to see it happen over there. They're just different. They're just built different. You're probably right. But might you be built different than you think? Might there be a new you that either you've avoided, you've not experienced yet? And so, as we're picking back up on this series, if you think you have to fix yourself in order to get God to love you more, if you want God to be proud of you, do you have to prove something to him for him to find value in you? I think it's a legitimate question that we wrestle with. But I think it's helpful to know that you're starting from the wrong assumption. You're starting from the assumption that you'll never be loved because of. Would you be willing to entertain a couple statements? Statements that I believe to be true. Thank you. You'll never be more loved than you are right now. And I know as I say that, that can spark some things. There's not more love to experience? This is it? I've been through so much, and this is the most love I'm ever going to feel. I don't know if I really want more of this God guy. Right? Or maybe it's like, I'm feeling so loved right now, I want more of it. There's not even more? Okay, well, that's all right, I'm good. Right? We can find ourselves in these different spots, and it might even be the person next to you is experiencing it differently. Next statement, you'll never be more accepted than you are in this instant. You'll never be more accepted than you are in this instant. And that can be tough to believe. It can be tough to find true, especially depending on your marriage situation. I'm supposed to be more loved and more accepted in my marriage than I am now. That would be kind of nice, right? Or maybe with kids, the parents, I really want to feel the love from my parents, but I don't know that I really trust them, and so I'm not sure that I can experience more of that. I would like it if they even did accept me for who I am. Maybe it's in your job, and I'm not enough for my employees, or I missed out on that deal, or I messed up that conversation, and so now I got to do some fixing. Maybe there's this swirl of sexuality inside of you, and you don't know what to do with it. You're not sure if you can trust anybody with this information. You don't know how to speak. You don't even know what the words are. And the work of Jesus settled that once and for all. And so we don't need to stress. We don't need to strive to somehow prove ourselves to God. And so if that's your driver, is I got to prove something. I got to make it known. I got to make sure everybody sees it. I got to make sure that God is paying attention to what I'm doing. I invite you just to take a rest, to breathe. I think it's helpful to think of it this way. God's not just barely tolerating the present day you. Because he's holding out hope that someday you're going to be worthy. You are the one that God loves as you are now. And we're going to get into where he talks about the new self, who the self that you can become, the capital S self, the God that he made you to be. But you right now are the one that God loves. He loves you. He's proud of you. That needs to be our starting point, especially if our default of our starting point is shame and blame. If I experience that, if I feel that, if that's my constant go-to, we need to be around someone who understands and is willing to be in it with us. There was this time I was in Belize, and we went into a cave under a mountain, into the darkness, Well, we had a guide. He had a light. And we're carrying tubes around our shoulders. So I didn't feel like much of a cave diver in that moment. But I knew we were going in. And we've got these tubes with us. And so we're kind of working our way through into the cave. And as we get to a certain point, he says, all right, everybody put your tubes in. Everybody wade into the water. We're now going to float in this cave back to the entrance. Okay, so we get in. Oop, that's chilly. I don't love cold. But we got in, and we begin to float down this underground stream. Pretty cool, pretty neat. And then they turned out the lights. And no one made a sound. So all you can hear is the trickle of water, the echoes of emptiness. And all I can see is absolutely nothing. I know my hand's right here. I cannot see my hand. I can't even make out fingers. And yet I know it's there. But I can't see it. I am utterly in this moment and completely alone. Anybody ever felt like that? Anybody ever experienced that? And then I begin to hear a shuffle, the person next to me. I begin to hear a squirm as somebody squeaks on their tube. I hear a yelp, somebody hits their foot on a rock. We hear the echo of a person, someone is near. And God is not distant. God isn't yelling at you from heaven. He's not separated saying, hey, you got to do something different. When you're crushed, when you're under a mountain, when you're suffocated by the weight of opposition, giving up can feel like the only option. What am I to do under all this pressure, under all this tenseness, under all of this lack of experience of God? All I have is no trust. All I have is no love. All I have is no pride. All I have is despair. Paul speaks to that in 1 Corinthians 1. It says, we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death. Does that resonate at all? But that was to make us rely not on ourselves, but on God who raises us, who raises the dead. He delivered us from such a deadly peril, and he will deliver us. On him we have set our hope that he will deliver us again. There's a phrase in the book, and it says, I am not stuck unless I stop. And so often when we are stopped, we can feel stuck, and we don't know what to do to unstick ourselves. And might it be that someone wants to come along and help us become unstuck, and then we can't stop. I'm committed to progress. And we're not saying that in a sense of, well, you got to keep running and you got to hustle and you got to grind and you got to do all this stuff and just groan it out. That works for a little bit. But to know that we have a God who is committed to our progress as well, that he is committed to you, that he is not stopping coming to you, that he wants to encounter with you. And would you please be open to his encounter with you? Would you accept yourself, the self that God had in mind when he wove you together, the self we are ever becoming and never surmounting? I know that I've written myself off more times than I care to admit. And if you want to live in your limitations, if you're here for that, you get to have them. I can't do this, I can't do that, I'm not enough. We get to live with those if we choose that. And sometimes we might even not even know that we're doing that. It might be that's our family history. That almost might feel like that's the legacy I have to live out, is this mantra or this repetition of whatever life has brought upon my family. That's who I am. That's how I'm going to operate. That's how I'm always going to respond. That's just who I am. And I'm here to tell you there's a different man or woman inside of you that he's saying, I want something different for you? And would you believe that maybe I could even ask God, I could change your personality? And when he's doing that, it's going to be uncomfortable. It might feel awkward. I don't know how to do this thing anymore. So often in life, I know that I want to know how to do anything and everything. I want to be confident. All right, in this situation, this is what you do. Whether I feel like it or not, I know that's my response is fear. My response is anger. My response is whatever. But growth isn't just possible. It's inevitable if we are willing to believe. So whether you're a single mother, you're a pastor, you're a mechanic, a school teacher, a student, we often talk ourselves out of some things and into others. And so when it comes to faith, might that also be true, that we have to talk ourselves out of debt and into faith? Might we have to talk ourselves out of weakness and into God's strength? Might we have to talk ourselves out of our head and into our future? So sometimes, maybe a lot of the time, as we said earlier, you feel like just not enough. Life is too big. It's too hard. It's beyond our control. You feel like the whole thing is set up to make you fail. No matter how hard I work, how much things are going, we're just waiting for the shoe to drop. Just waiting for the next tough thing. Waiting for the next letdown. Waiting for the next death in life. And I think sometimes it can be helpful to have this image. Is if you feel like somebody's saying that you are a failure, who is the person pointing that finger at you right now? Who is that person right now? Whoever first came to mind, that is that person that you're trying to prove something to. It might be your spouse. It might be dad, who might not even be around anymore. It might be God. And so what we do with that is we make our lack, whatever that lack might be, and we make it into our label. And with that label, then we live that out. And so it's easy to then jump from, I don't have enough time. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough experience, I don't have enough, whatever. And we can jump from I don't have enough to I'm not enough. And not only am I not enough, but I can't. I can't do it. I can't. And I know for me, my default is when it comes to fight, flight, or flee, is flee. I would love for it to be fight. I'd love to be the one like, oh, I'm going to stand up in the face of opposition. I'm going to be the one that's just going to handle it. I'm going to be the one, and yet my default is to avoid. My default is to go somewhere else. In junior high, I attended one junior high dance because I was, one, afraid of the girls. But two, I just didn't love crowds of people. I just wanted to be alone. I wanted to be off by myself. And the only reason I attended that dance was because it was my eighth grade dance, and my mom cornered me, put a dress shirt on me and a tie, and said, you're going. In fact, she didn't even take me home that day. I was doing something, and I think it was track practice. She picked me up, took me to my aunt and uncle's house, so I didn't even have a chance to escape and come up with an excuse. You are going to this, son. All right, mom. But I would take on tasks. Anybody do this? You take on, there's something that you got to do. There's something coming up. There's something you'd rather not be a part of. And you come up with another something to fill that time with. So for me, it was, mom, I got to mow the grass. And it took us at least 3.5 hours to mow our yard every time because we had a ton of acreage. Mom, I got to weed eat. I got to make sure all those trees are cleaned up. Mom, I got to bush hog. It's for dad. I got to go help dad. I got to go help dad on the farm. And I was busy, or I had too much homework, or I had a project, right? We come up with these different fill-in-the-blanks, whatever it might be. What's your go-to? I have something else I need to do because I'd rather do that, even if I don't enjoy it, because I know I don't want to be doing that thing. So for some of us, it looks like if I were better at handling money, we wouldn't be $20,000 in debt. Maybe if I were a better parent, my son would have better grades and wouldn't be failing all his classes. Maybe for you, it's if I were a better boss, we wouldn't have lost that contract to the competition. It's my fault. I don't have enough because I am not enough. In reply to that, Pastor Furtick writes, "Let's show ourselves some compassion. I'm not saying to delude ourselves into thinking we are perfect or that we couldn't have made some better choices, but we cannot internalize those and convince ourselves that we are not enough. My home is not clean enough. My job does not pay enough. I don't negotiate well enough. I didn't try hard enough. I don't have time, energy, self-discipline, credit, experience." Jesus says, "You are enough. And because I am with you, you will be enough." Jesus is why we are enough. He lives in you if you have accepted him. He says you are enough. Believe it. Live it. Accept it. Trust it. Are you willing to? I just noticed this yesterday. I was driving a truck, borrowed it for someone to help the family move. And my hands were on the wheel and I was real tight, white knuckling it. And how often in life do we not even realize that's what we're doing with our life? And I invite you here for a moment. Can you just breathe? Everybody, let's take a deep breath in. You're welcome to do it again if you want. Perhaps you just need to move your fingers as best you can. Some may or may not be able to move your fingers like this. I'm not a piano player. My hands aren't big enough. But would you begin to trust this hard truth that God does believe in you and that he is trustworthy? And it doesn't mean it always works out in your favor, but I am believing and committed to that he is good. And so what am I going to do with that knowledge? Am I just going to let it be, or am I going to believe it and live it out? We can focus on our lack, but instead perhaps we focus on God's abundance. Exodus 3, God is talking to Moses, and he says, "I am who I am." He's saying, "I am sufficiency. I am abundance." Galatians 2, Paul writing to the people in Galatia, "Christ in me." Christ in Paul was the deciding factor. God is the supplier. God is the one. 1 John 5, who God is remains true even when the story seems to shift, even in the turbulence, even in the rain, right? Even in the shifting foundations. Does that change who he is and what he is about? So what if we were to accept our true self, the self that God created? It's the new you. Two ways that I'm becoming new. I was at the park a couple weeks ago. I was walking on the walking path. If you haven't been to the Play Acres Park, check it out. It's got some good walking paths. I might see you there. And I was walking, and across the park, I could see this elementary age girl. And I'm like, I know her name. I know her name, and I don't know it in this moment. And now I'm going to cross paths with her, and I'm not going to know her name, and I'm going to be upset. She's not going to know the difference, but I know that I don't know her name. And how many of y'all know it's helpful when somebody greets you with your name? I know there's been stories of, I know Dick Hensley's really good at this, of doing his best to remember your name. So if you're new today and you haven't met Mr. Hensley, he's at the back right now, shake his hand, and if you come back, he does a good job of remembering names. So I'm walking, and I'm like, well, God, I'm supposed to become this new person. Is it possible in this new person I have a better brain and I can remember information better? And so, God, I'm walking and I'm turning, I'm twisting, and I'm like, God, I can't remember her name. It's like right there, kind of, you know, but I just can't. And so I said, God, what's her name? And he told me her name. And I chuckled, and I'm like, that's not how that works. Like, it was just circumstance. It finally came to me, finally came out, right? And I'm just learning to believe that coincidence is just not true. Just not real. God is at work. Another time, last night, we're at a rehearsal dinner for a wedding that's happening later today. And I wanted to sit at this table, and I even grabbed a drink cup from that table, and I filled my water cup. And then I walked back towards that table, and I looked at this other one, even though I wanted to be here, and I said, I'm not saying no to you, But I'm saying yes to these people. So I took that cup and put it over there and sat with this group, had a great conversation, trying to get to know some new people. There were times of awkward silence, just being honest. I wasn't sure what to ask next, but we made it through, and it was good. So to be intentional would be the way to summarize that, the word. The way I'm becoming new, I don't have a better brain now. I wish that would be nice. But I've got the intentionality is becoming part of my toolkit. And to also believe that leadership is contagious. And so I helped fill the role on Main Street, Fairmount, as president of that board. So now you know who to go to if you have complaints. But I don't know always what I'm doing, right? Anybody ever been in leadership and always know what they're doing? Nope, me too. I don't always know what I'm doing, but I'm okay with my ignorance. I'm trying to learn, I'm trying to grow, right? But I'm okay with it if we can tap into other people, into their network, to develop, to learn, to lead for the betterment of people, because we as a church, we as Main Street, we do what we do in order to help and come alongside our people. In Genesis 25, it's talking about Esau. Anybody ever heard of Esau and Jacob? And Esau was the older brother. He was the really hairy guy. A lot of red hair all over his body. All over. Red. Esau. And we read the story where he goes off. He's the hunter-gatherer. He's the fighter. He's the one that like you want on your football team. He's the one that you want helping on your side. You don't want him on the other team. And he comes back. And he comes back and he's hungry. And he's so desperate, he's despairing for hunger, with hunger, that he asks his brother for a bowl of soup. And his brother, right or wrong, was very crafty and said, I'll give you your bowl of soup if you give me your birthright as the firstborn. Which, of course, in those days, if you were the firstborn, you were the first to the throne, if you will, you were the first to receive the inheritance, you were now the next patriarch or leader of the family. And so Esau, silly Esau, sells his birthright to his brother over a bowl of stew. And we think, Esau, what are you doing? You're handing over the keys to the kingdom. You get to be the next in line and you're just hungry? I'm hungry sometimes. I was hungry twice this last week when I was fasting because Pastor Brock asked us to do it. I'm not doing it for Brock, though. I'm doing it for God. Maybe a little bit for Pastor Brock. Silly Esau, but don't we do this all the time? We don't value who God made us to be, so I sell out for something else. I'm not going to be confident in this moment. I don't know how it's going to play out. I'm not going to be willing to commit to what Jesus would have me do in this moment and sit at this other table. Am I open to honest to what he would do in my marriage if I would actually listen to what he has to say and live that out? Might it be that my spouse might pay a little more attention to me or hear me a little bit more if I actually were doing that in the first place first? Silly Esau. Silly us. Do you ever have an experience in life that just nags at you? A memory that always seems to pop up? Or those words that someone spoke over you that for whatever reason, you just believe to be true. Maybe it was a good one. Maybe it's, you know, you're really fast or you're beautiful or what have you. Maybe it's, I don't know, you got a square haircut. I received that one once. Okay. Changed my haircut. Or maybe it's this that, you know, I don't believe that I'm not very smart or I'm not deep enough, I'm not thin enough, I'm not strong enough, I'm not witty enough, I'm not whatever. Anybody ever nagged by any of that? Anybody constantly pursued by anything like that? Me and Brock, Dennis, I saw Lauren nod a little bit. So we got four of us in here, great. So in junior high, what a time. Anybody want to go back to junior high? Nobody. Me too. In junior high, I so wanted to be noticed and known. Anybody relate to that? I want to be seen. I want to be heard. I want to have a voice. And yet I wouldn't talk to teachers. That doesn't make sense. But I was so afraid of attention. And I was a pretty fit kid. I had a pretty high metabolism, worked on the farm, did sports, was able to be fit. So one day we're in health class, and another student convinced me to flex my bicep. I didn't want to do it, but I did want to do it, you know? Like, so his eyeballs got real big, which I liked. And he said I had baseballs hiding in my arms. That's a pretty cool thing to come back to you from time to time. Like, I got baseballs in here, honey. You hear that? And I was pretty pumped for about 2 seconds until he turned to the pretty girl next to him and told her about it. And my face flushed, sweat poured from every single pore in my body. Immediately, my shirt was wet. And in junior high, there's not much worse else than being sweaty for no reason whatsoever, right? But she was intrigued. So they convinced me to flex my arm one more time. I, again, liking this but hating this moment, hurried to get the moment over with and then focused on stopping sweating. If you know how to do that, please, I would like to go back to junior high and teach myself. And this was the spring semester, so I was running track and field. And we went out for practice that afternoon. You can go ahead and throw that picture up there. Looks a little different now. This was the track that I ran on in junior high. But it's got a playground in the middle now, which we didn't have that. That would have been kind of cool. But right where that circle spot is where this next piece of the story took place. We went out for practice that afternoon, and we were waiting by the fence for our coaches. Always waiting on coaches, right? Some of the girls were talking and looking in the direction of the boys. So, of course, the boys were getting amped. Girls are looking this way. Like, normally, they're like holding their noses. Finally, the girls called out, "Flex!" And then all the fellows are looking around like, who are they talking to? Like, and I wasn't sure if they were talking to me or not. But I kept my mouth shut and I faded into the background of the boys. I don't remember if any of them flexed. They probably did. We moved on. We went and practiced. But as it's silly as it sounds, this day comes to me from time to time with a ton of wonderings. What if they were talking to me? What if I had flexed? Would they have laughed? Would the guys have laughed? What if the girls liked what they saw? What if I missed my moment? Could I have become something more than I am today? Would my life be different if I had flexed at junior high track practice? And that's a fun story. But it is one that comes to me from time to time. And it comes with these wonderings. And those are some fun listings of wonderings. But it comes with wonderings like, did I miss a moment that could have been kind of cool? Did I miss out? Did I choose to avoid and not live out an opportunity? Or could I have a different experience and a different story to share today? See, these seeds of self-rejection, because that's what I did. I rejected myself. I didn't figure they were talking to me, even if I wanted them to be. The seeds of self-rejection grow. And every time we agree with them, we water these seeds. And so we've got this seed that we plant, and then we water it. And it grows into this thing we don't really like, and yet we continue to water it. And then it eventually turns into this invasive weed that chokes us out. So what is that memory? What is that experience? What is that thing that you have gone through that continues to choke you out? And we can carry this for years, never actually wondering if it's even true. So we can live in and from abundance rather than lack. We can live from the space of self-rejection. We can live in the space of unhappiness. We can live in the space of believing that we are unworthy. Or we can believe what Jesus has told us. And he says that I am with you. I am for you. I am not against you. In fact, I'm against those who are opposed to you. Are we going to believe that? Are we going to trust that? We get to decide that. He involves us in the process. Are we going to live out life differently than we would prefer? Are we going to become and step into this new self? And so if we live from his abundance, we're no longer worried about that mom who brought those zebra-shaped, gluten-free, vegan cookies to the zoo trip. And we compare ourselves to that person. But we don't know what they sacrificed to pull off those cookies. We don't know if they missed out on time with their kid. We don't know if they have a strained relationship. We don't know, right? We just look at it and say, well, they always seem to have it together. They always seem to be able to pull it off. And I just can't do that. Just can't do it. I can barely keep my own bathroom clean, not to mention pulling off these cookies. So if we need to change, I believe that God will make that path clear. We will experience conviction and grace along that path. But I want you to believe that your inner dialogue matters. We're going to wrap here in just a moment. If I can, I'll invite the band up. I'll invite the band back up if they would. Go ahead. So your inner dialogue matters. Every day. And yeah, there's times where maybe we don't get enough sleep. Maybe there's times where we don't get enough time to pull off the project. But if we tap into abundance, we tap into a reservoir, we tap into trust, we can wake every morning with the belief that God will grace you with the time and energy needed. So the statement that I've wrestled with and when to put it in and how to even express it is, believe there is truth in the trust and trust in the truth. Are we going to trust or not? So this can be lived out with priorities. We can focus on what God wants us to do now. And there's times where, God, what do you want me to do with this? And how do I make this decision? Could be he doesn't even want you to make that decision because you should be over here doing this instead. What is it that God would prioritize in your life? He prioritizes people. He prioritizes relationship. He prioritizes health and wellness and wholeness. He prioritizes that we would live fully alive. And so can that be a helpful filter to make decisions with? We have our presence and the presence of God. Can we get in it with him? Jesus said in Revelation 3:20, he has invited us deeper into intimacy and power. Would we trust that he is at work and that we can be with him if we would just enter his presence? That we can be proactive. We don't just sit back and wait. All right, Jesus, give me that bigger brain. Jesus, go back and help me learn not to sweat anymore in those situations. Jesus, would you help me as my marriage continues to wallow in these depths? As my kids are continuing to spiral and I desire a relationship, what is the move here, Jesus? Jesus, what would you have me do? I've made that phone call 100 times, Jesus. How would you change it? How can I be proactive? But God is faithful to his word, but it's not in our time, which is frustrating. And so would we be patient? Would we delay? And delay can become desperation and then despair. But there's no need to panic. Jesus is on the throne. God is on the throne. He's not biting his nails. All is well. And so I have this tension of this, not a lot is going well, but all is well with Jesus. What do we do with that? What do we do with that? We can hold it in tension, and somehow both can be true. And I want Jesus to come into this space. Jesus, I need a healing. Jesus, I need a breakthrough here. And can I name that? So I'm going to have us do here, and everybody's going to do it at once. Don't worry about the next person next to you is going to say. And we're not whispering. We're stating out loud to God, where is it I need you to change? What is it? I'm going to count down from 3. Whatever first came to mind, whether it's your answer, you can change it later. We're not going to be grading your paper. What is it? So 3, 2, 1. So what we're going to do here is we're going to hang for a moment. We'll sing a little bit of a song. You're welcome to join in. I encourage you, if you're prompted to sing, sing. If you have something stirring in you that says you're prompted to stand, stand. If you're prompted to hold the pew in front of you, hold the pew. If you're prompted to go pray over someone, whether it's out loud or quietly, do that. If you need to come forward, do that. You will not be alone. If you need to pray, I'll be available. Pastor Brock will be available. Take a moment here.
Grateful you were with us today. Be sure to subscribe and rate us so other people can know about the podcast. Join us on a Sunday morning in Fairmount or find our live stream on YouTube, our website, fairmountfriends.church, or our church app on Tithely. See you soon.